Wow, here we are. Saturday night. Boy, my name is Juanita, and I'm a very grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon. And I gotta tell you, I am pretty doggone nervous. I've done this a lot. I mean, a lot, and I'm nervous. I've got some really good friends here, you know, and it's only because of Al-Anon and AA that I have made the friendships that I've made here in the state of Colorado. And some of these folks are like Marie and her husband Mickey that I've had, you know, for 25, 26 years. And some of these people, some of you all, these people, it's like, who are these people, you know? You know, a lot of you guys have seen me, you know, in the good times, you've seen me in the bad times when, you know, my mom and my dad died because we come up here once a year for a conference, and, you know, my mom and my dad died like, I don't know, about 6-7 years apart. But they both passed away the beginning of January, and my husband Tom and I have come up here the end of January every year for the last 25 years, and you all have watched me cry and keep quiet and stumble to my room and try and avoid you, and you've watched, you know, and be just in a state of absolute sadness, and you've seen me just in a place where I've had an open heart, you know, and was able to receive love and give love. And so you've seen the best of me and you've seen the worst of me. And I'm not sure what you're going to get tonight. But you got me. So anyway, I want to thank Steve and I want to thank Donna, because she gave me the first phone call, and thank the committee, Al-Anon committee and the AA committee, because it truly is an honor and a privilege to be invited to be here with you this weekend, and thank you so much for that. Truly, truly is a blessing and an incredible gift. And I also like to thank the, we used to call them tapers, now I guess they're called recorders, I'm not sure where he is, he's somewhere, but, you know, Dicobe Tapes is here, and they do an incredible job of taping speakers at events such as this and carry the message. You know, I can't tell you how many times in early recovery, these lights are a trip, I tell you. It's like, wow. I can't see you. I have no idea who any of you are. I just see, like, just know that there's some bodies out there, you know? So anyway, Dicobe Tapes. Thank you, because you've helped carry the message. You know, I've been in my car since early recovery, and the only thing I had as I was driving to and from work and some tough days were these talks of speakers, and they absolutely helped me, and just they carried a message to me at times when just going to an Al-Anon meeting just wasn't cutting it. You know, it was a deep message of love and of recovery and of steps. And I'm not just talking Al-Anon speakers. I'm talking Al-Anon, I'm talking AA speakers, because I'm that Al-Anon that is just like, you got something spiritual, you got something of value, my ears are wide open, man, because I need it all. I need absolutely everything that this program and our two fellowships have to offer. So I'm grateful for that, and thank you, Dicobe Tapes, for helping us do that. They were in Baltimore, and I got to see them up in Baltimore at our Al-Anon International Convention, which was absolutely fantastic. I want to tell you, I'm going to report to you that having been at our Al-Anon International Convention in Baltimore, I want to report that Al-Anon is in good, solid hands. We are in a place in Al-Anon where they're focused on steps, they're focused on God, focused on recovery, and I don't know about you, but that rocks my world, you know? And I was there in Baltimore, and I came home, and I was just filled and so happy to just see the recovery and the strength and the experience and the hope that was being offered there. So if nobody's told you, Al-Anon is doing very, very well, and I'm grateful for that. Because what are we talking about? What's the theme of your weekend, which is not those 12 reasons we're here? And why do we do that? Because we want to make sure, I want to make sure, let me speak for myself, I want to make sure that what's carried to my kids and my grandkids when they need it, because believe me, we got a few that, there's some seats here, and you know, some of them just might need to fill it. So I want to know that the message that is being carried is the message of recovery, a good, strong message of recovery, and a message of hope. Because I'll tell you, sometimes our kids are the ones that need it the most. They're the ones that need it the most. So with all that, I said a prayer, and I got to tell you, Tom and I, after the banquet, went back up to our room, and we both got on our knees and prayed. And he said some prayers, and, you know, then it was my turn, and I just started to cry because I said to God, I said, thank you, God, for giving me a man of an Alcoholics Anonymous who will get down on his knees and pray with me and for me so that I can carry a message, you know, tonight that is your message, not my message. You know, my prayer is, I never know what I'm going to say, but my prayer is always, God, clear me out of the way, open up my heart, my mind, and my spirit, and you fill me with the thoughts that lead to the words that I need to say. Because you see, I don't know what you need to hear. I don't know who you are. I don't know what your circumstances are in your life. All I know is that my job is to let God speak through me. That's it. Because I can plan it, but that doesn't mean that I know what you need to hear. So this is God's talk, man. If you don't like it, it ain't on me. Just saying. Just saying. So, having said that, oh boy, I gotta wrap this up at 8, so let's see how we're gonna do this. Okay, bud. My first meeting of Al-Anon was July 2nd of 1986. Tom had been in a treatment center for 2 weeks, and when I took him into this treatment center, they said to me as they were doing intake, okay, we're going to take him in, but here's the deal. We insist that you go to at least 3 meetings of Al-Anon, or we're not going to let him out of here. Yes. I don't think they train them quite well at this treatment center, you know, because later on, I was thinking about it, and I thought, I would not have said that to someone like me, because my first thought was, well, you can just keep this SOB, because I've been trying to get rid of him for quite some time. True, true, true. I mean, I'm not making this up. This is true. Yeah, my truth meter's right here. I mean, these guys have known me for forever, and I got true. Yeah. So yeah, I told Heidi, I said, if you think I'm full of BS and I'm going somewhere, yeah, just do this. Okay, so I'm keeping my eye on you, Heidi. So I went to my first meeting. I went to my first Al-Anon meeting, July 2nd of 1986. And I had tried the week before to go. I drove around the block, and I was watching people go in through these doors, and it looked like they were going down into this basement, and it looked pretty dirty, looked pretty dingy, and I thought, I ain't going there. I do not belong there. Someone like me does not belong there. And so I drove and went back to work. But the problem was I'd been to a family weekend, you know, family day at the treatment center. And the counselors there asked me if I'd gone to Al-Anon, and I said, no, I haven't gone. And they said, well, we really think you ought to go. So here I am, July 2nd, and that's the last thing I want to do, man. It's the last thing I want to do. You know, 4th of July is coming. I'm going to go up to Albuquerque, and, you know, I know they're going to ask me, you know, have you gone to Al-Anon? And I had to look to these counselors, to the people at this treatment center, like a kind, caring, loving wife, which I was not feeling, believe me, at all, not in any way. But, you know, it's all about how you look, you know? And I had to put the image out, you know, because they had to know that there was nothing wrong with me. He was the problem. fix him, he stops drinking, and we're all okay. Thank you very much. So I went to this Al-Anon meeting, and I'm walking in, and I'm looking around, and they start the meeting, and I found myself finding something wrong with everyone who was sitting in this meeting. There was something wrong with everyone there. You know, there were the old housewives, and I wasn't a housewife. I was a professional woman working, you know, I had a good job, and, you know, so I can't relate to those housewives. I don't know if they were housewives, but they looked like what I thought housewives were, you know? And then there were the hippies, you know, there were the old hippies, you know, and I thought, I really can't relate to them. I've been there and I've done that. I wanted to think I'd been there and I'd done that. But if you know Al-Anons, we are not hippie material. I am too responsible. There is nothing carefree about me. There are responsibilities that have to be met, and there are things you have to do, so, you know, but my mind told me, you know, it's like, yeah, I've been there, done that, and, you know, can't relate. So I knew they couldn't help me. And then there were the people who were dressed very nicely. You know, like Steve, Marie, and myself, JC, Margarita, you know. It's like they look really nice, and I thought these people look at, they work in an office. And I thought, I really know they can't help me, because I'd been working in an office for the state of New Mexico for quite some time, and let me tell you, in my office, nobody was talking about the kinds of things that were going on in my home. So I knew no one in that room who looked like they were a professional person could help me. So no one could help me. I just thought there were a room full of pathetic people. But I sat there, you know, because I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do so I can report back and say I'd been to this Al-Anon meeting. And so the meeting goes on, and I don't know what they said. I didn't hear much. I know they were talking about God at times, and I really felt sorry for them because didn't they know there really is no such thing, and it's a fairy tale, and, you know, it's like, my God, get off of it. Like, Grimm's fairy tales are better than what you guys are talking about here, you know? And so, finally, the meeting was almost over, and this one woman spoke up, and she asked what I think most everybody who comes into an Al-Anon meeting wants to know, and that is, how do I get the alcoholic into treatment? That was her question. And I thought, finally, that's the question. What's wrong with you people that you haven't been able to even approach answering a question like that? And nobody said anything. After the woman got quiet and didn't say anything, it was dead silence. And so I raised my hand. Hey, you know? And I say, Al-Anon made its first mistake because they called on me. And so I proceeded to tell them all how to get the alcoholic into treatment. Yeah. And so, the reason I did that was because I really thought I had done it. You know, about 2 months, a month before, you know, I'd woken up from this dream, and in this dream, there's this guy who's dirty, scraggly, has long hair, and he's struggling to climb out of this deep gutter. And as he's struggling to climb out of this deep gutter, it's even harder, and he looks worse with every struggle. And that's when I woke up, and I thought, oh, my God, this is my husband. And my next thought was, yeah, that is your husband, but if that's your husband, what does that say about you? And so as I lay in bed this morning, I said, oh my goodness, we have to have a conversation. And I said to myself, but what am I going to say? Because I thought, what am I going to say that's different from anything I've ever said before? And I said a prayer to this God that I didn't think existed. I said the prayer to a God who I was trying very hard to convince myself did not exist. Big difference. And I said, God, if I talk to him, will you give me the words? you've got to give me the words because I got nothing. I've got nothing. And we had that conversation, and he said, I'll go to treatment. And, you know, a month later, he's in there and stuff. So, but I forgot. You know, in that moment, in that meeting, I have the answer how to get him into treatment because I'd forgotten. I thought I'd done it. I forgot that in that moment, in that morning, laying in bed, I literally experienced step one, step two, and step three, at least for that conversation. I'd forgotten all of that, and I thought that I'd done it, and I'd got him there. Well, I finished, you know, my little diatribe, I don't know what you could call it, you know, and they clapped, because that's what we did back then. We clapped, and everybody clapped, and they said, oh, keep coming, thank you very much for sharing, keep coming back. And I thought, I will keep coming back, because you poor, you need me. You really need me. And so I kept coming back. I kept coming back to Al-Anon, and I could report at the next family days that I'd been to Al-Anon. And, you know, when Tom was at this family, at this treatment center, they asked me a question, and the question was this. What do you like doing? Floored me. Because I couldn't have told you what I like doing. I could have told you what my parents, what my children, what Tom liked to do. I couldn't have told you what I liked to do because I had no clue. I had absolutely no idea what I liked to do. I had lost my life. By the time I walked into that Al-Anon meeting, July 2nd, 1986, I had lost myself. I had no sense of who I was. All I knew was despair, frustration, shame, guilt, fear, and I didn't even know I had fear. I was absolutely devastated. I was absolutely so angry. I didn't even know I was angry. I'd pulled it all in and sucked it all in. All those feelings were deep inside me so tightly. They had no name. They had no name. And I couldn't answer that question, and I was just devastated because I thought, oh my God, who in the world am I? Who am I? And then they said something, and it was, you have to keep going to Al-Anon. They didn't just say it to me. They said it to all the family there. They said, you have to keep going to Al-Anon because the alcoholic, when he leaves here, cannot go home to an old idea. And you family members are all old ideas. And I didn't understand what they meant then. I know today that what they meant was I had old beliefs, old attitudes, old behaviors, old judgments, old criticisms, old fears. All I knew was to live in crisis and in chaos. If things were quiet in our home, I'm the one who started things up again. Because I didn't know how to live in quiet. I didn't know how to live when things weren't when things were not in a complete uproar. I didn't know how to live with that. That's an old idea. And I didn't know it. I didn't know it. I went to Al-Anon meetings for a year. And at the end of a year, it was a little after a year, my brother, who was 5 years younger than me, he was very, very ill. He'd been ill for quite some time. He'd been ill most of his life. And about 4 or 5 years before I came into the program, my mother took him into the hospital, and he was diagnosed with his kidneys working at 13%. So they immediately put him on dialysis, and he had to do dialysis 3 times a week. So I'm a little over a year in this program, in Al-Anon, and my mother calls me and said, I had to take your brother to the hospital, and I go in there. And my mom and I were there for probably 3 days and 3 nights, and at the end of those 3 days and 3 nights, And my mom and I walked into my brother's room. And the nurses and the doctors were working on him with the defibrillators, bringing him back one more time. And this was over 20 times of doing this. And they looked at us, and I thought, oh, man, that look on their face. I mean, you could just see the look on their face that it's not going well. It hadn't been going well because he'd been in a coma for the whole 3 days. The minute my mom got him into the emergency room, he immediately went into a coma. And this whole time that he was in a coma, the doctors and the nurses would all say, you can talk to him if it makes you feel better, but he can't hear you. You can touch him, you know, you can pat his hand if it makes you feel better, but he's not going to feel anything. Now, here's what I'm going to tell you. I would talk to him, and tears would roll down his cheeks. I would pat him. I would hold his hand. I would squeeze him. And he would shake. So I couldn't believe anything. I didn't believe what they said. I really felt like my brother could hear me, and I felt like my brother felt my touch. And it made me feel better, and I like to think that I was able to give my brother some comfort. But at the end of those 3 days, and we walk in, and I see the doctors, and I take my mom, and I steer her out of my brother's room, and I say, let's take a walk, Mom, and we take a walk around the cardiac unit of the hospital in Santa Fe. And as we're walking, my question to her was, Mom, how are you? How are you doing, Mom? And she said, I'm not doing well. And I said, why not? And she said, I'm really afraid of where he's going to end up. I'm really afraid of where he's going to end up. You see, my brother was not the kind of guy who was out helping the little sisters of the poor. You know what I'm saying? And so, I mean, he wasn't an evil, evil guy, but anyway. So my mom said, I'm afraid of where he's going to end up. And I could relate to that. I knew where she was coming from. Because that's how I got to you. You see, when I got to you, I thought I was convincing myself that there was no God because I was scared to death that if there was, this God would send me to the pits of hell for the things that I'd done, things that I said, or the things that I hadn't done. I really felt like this God was going to punish me. So if I just convince myself there's not one, then there won't be one and I don't have to worry. So my mom tells me I'm afraid where he's going to end up. And I start thinking about that. And as I'm thinking about this, and I'm really glad, God uses whatever's at hand to work through me and to work with others. And I had been coming to Al-Anon for just over a year, so that by the time we got to this place and I'm walking around this cardiac care unit with my mother, I was beginning to think maybe there was a God. Because I'm hearing you all talk about a God, about a higher power, about a God of your understanding, how there's something bigger and better than you. And as we're walking, I said, you know what, Mom? I said, I think that God loves us so very much. And he loves us so much, and he knows what we're going to do way before we do it. And because he knows us and because he loves us so much, he forgives us for what we do wrong before we've even done it. And my mom stopped and looked me right in the eyes. She looked me right in the eyes. And she said, do you really believe that? And I had to stop for a minute because I don't know where those words came from. I really don't. I never intended to say them. I didn't know if I even believed them. I really didn't know. So I stopped and I thought about it for a couple of seconds. And finally I said, you know what, Mom? I said, I really do. I said, I really do believe that that's true. And we walked on a little ways, and we got close to my brother's room. And the doctors came out and they said, we're really sorry, we did all we could. And we said, thank you, we know you did. What my mother said just before the doctors came out and said that was, she says, you know what? She said, if God wants him that bad, God can have him. It's because of people like you that I heard talk about God, your love of God, your love for God, the love God has for you, that my heart was opened just enough so that I could say those words to my mom and say them with every bit of belief that I had deep within me. So that when her son died, she could give her son up to a loving God. There was a woman here, lived in Colorado, a great Al-Anon member. Her name was Rusty Kelly. She passed away, what, 15 years ago? Maybe more? Maybe more. I can't remember. It's been a while. Rusty Kelly was amazing. Amazing. I loved that woman. And Rusty Kelly would talk about losing her sons, You know, if I'm not mistaken, one died to alcoholism and one committed suicide. And Rusty Kelly called her sponsor one day after the death of her second son, and she said, I'll be damned if I'm going to trust this God that has taken my sons. You want me to keep turning my will and my life over this God? I want nothing to do with him. And her sponsor said, Rusty, God doesn't take our sons, and God didn't take your sons. God received them. And you see, my mother was able to give my brother to a God who received him. What's the secret of Al-Anon? What's the secret of Al-Anon? Tom and I were sitting in meditation a couple of weeks ago in the morning, and I said, Tom, I said, do you realize that 7 steps out of our 12 mention God, higher power, power, or spiritual awakening? 7 out of 12. I think what we got here is a God solution. The 12 steps, in the 12 steps it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we have a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And then we try and carry the message and practice these principles in all our affairs. I will tell you that for the longest time, I carried a mess of a message. I did not have a good, solid, solution-oriented message. It was a mess. It was a mess. For 2 years, I sat in Al-Anon meetings. I picked up all the lingo, all the nice little sayings, all the words, all the phrases, all the slogans, and I could rattle them off. And because we started going to conferences early on, I could say some great, incredible spiritual stuff. And I rocked your world, man. And people would say, thank you for sharing at the end of meetings. Boy, you just gave me what I needed. Thank you so much. And I'd be like, yeah. My pleasure. No worry. It's all good. It was all lies. All lies. I had no recovery. You know, I was talking this morning to someone and I said, you know, the old timers when I came in used to say, if you don't have a program at home, you don't have a program. And the way I looked and the way I sounded in my meetings for the first many years, when I left those meetings, got on the streets, and walked home, walked into my home, I did not sound or look like the person who was in those meetings, let me tell you. You know, and I did not have a program because I didn't have one at home. And what happened to me after 2 years was I finally got a sponsor. I reached the bottom. I got absolutely desperate because I'd always said, if Tom just got sober, I'd be okay. And I grew up in active alcoholism. My father drank. My mother was angry. She was bitter. She was withdrawn. She was emotionally not present for us as kids. And you know how I showed up to my family and to my kids. Frustrated, an emotional mess, totally withdrawn emotionally from my family and from my kids. I learned well. We were all separate people living in the same house, but we were not together. And that's exactly what I brought to our marriage when Tom and I got married. He had two boys, I had a daughter, we had a daughter together, we had yours, mine, and ours, and we played the kids, the stepchildren, against the other. It was bad. We were not a pretty picture in our home. We were not the Brady Bunch by any means, let me tell you. Not even close. To tell you how bad it was, without going into a lot of detail, my son, our oldest son, one day called us after Tom and I had been in our respective fellowships for about a year and a half, and he said, I'm coming tonight to your house, and I'm going to burn it down. And we were worried that night because we knew he was capable of it, and he had that much anger in him because we hadn't been present for him. We really hadn't been. But coming back, so the sponsor started taking me through these 12 steps. We started working these 12 steps. I began to change. I really began to change. Now, I didn't like taking responsibility for my actions. Believe me, I hated that. Because I didn't want to have to do anything different. Really, I thought he should do it all. I don't want to be the vulnerable one. He's the one who should do it. Because, you know, the first step for me for the longest time was still just a theory. It really was. It was like, am I powerless? Yeah, I'm powerless, blah, blah, blah. Because, you know, it's just like what you're supposed to say if you're a good little Al-Anon, you know? But as I began to work these steps over and over again, what happened was I began to get the first step. You see, I came into Al-Anon when Tom was already sober. For me, it was like, this is easy, man, you know? It's like, yeah, first step, I'm powerless, my life's unmanageable. Okay, next. What I had done for the first couple of years, we see them on the window shades. I took those steps and I worked them off the wall. And if you had asked me, have you worked the steps? I said, absolutely. I had worked them off the wall. And I had an off-the-wall program. My relationships were off the wall. My sanity was off the wall. I was off the wall. My relationship with Tom was off the wall. There was nothing about it that was centered or balanced. So I got this sponsor and things began to change and I began to change. And what happened to us was that 5 years in this program, our youngest daughter, who was then 12, attempted suicide. And God uses whatever's at hand. You know, God uses whatever's at hand. And what happened was we were required by law to put her into adolescent psychiatric care, which we did. And we all came together as a family with a counselor. And I remember this because it was the first day that we all met after she'd been placed into this center. And the counselor asked our daughter, do you think your parents love you? And our daughter got quiet for quite some time. I mean, it felt like forever. It was probably not more than 5 seconds, but it felt like forever. And finally she spoke and she said, now I do. Now I do. You see, we'd found recovery, he and AA and me and Al-Anon, and we were doing this deal. I was sponsoring people. I had a sponsor. I was active in service. I was serving as group representative, you know, for my meeting. Always watch when somebody says my meeting, you know, because it's like, heaven forbid anybody try to change my meeting, you know. They'll have me to deal with. But, so I was in it, and I was involved, and I was doing it all. What I wasn't doing was being the mother God expected me to do, to be, and wanted me to be. I really was not being that. And it really opened up my eyes, and it began to change things for us. And it wasn't easy. Our oldest children didn't like it. We forced all of them into Alateen, and they hated Alateen. Oh, my God. They hated it. But we made them go to at least 6 meetings. And you know, it's the old thing. Go to 6 meetings, and if you still, you know, it's like, okay, you don't have to go. So we made them go to 6 meetings, and that was it. And our oldest son was living with friends. Various friends. My oldest daughter was living with my parents. So it gives you an idea of what early recovery was like in our home. It was not pleasant. Early recovery is not pleasant. There's a guy who often tells his story in Alcoholics Anonymous, and his name is Kenny, and Tom and I heard Kenny many years ago, and Kenny's mom, Kenny shared this, and he said, my mom, my old, you know, Brooklyn mom used to say to me, Kenny, drunk or sober, you're no day at the beach, you know? And there have been times, you know, after we both got into our programs that I thought, man, I'll tell you, it's a good thing I'm an Al-Anon, because if I wasn't, this guy'd be dead, you know? He, like, made it through those days of active drinking, but because it's tough, you know? Early sobriety is difficult. I didn't know how to live with a guy who was sober. When I took him home from the treatment center, I was petrified. Petrified. I didn't know who he was. I only knew how to live with him drunk and drugging. And I thought, he's going to spend a few days, a few weeks with me, and he's going to look at me one of these days and he's going to say, she's not enough, man. I got to blow this joint. She's not smart enough. She's not thin enough. She's not pretty enough. She's not rich enough. She's not any of the enoughs. And I knew it was going to happen. I just knew it was going to happen. I lived my life afraid and never knew it. Never knew it. Because I would shake my hand, my fist at the world, because that was my protection. So when I say I didn't want to change, I did not want to change. I wanted him to change. Because if I change, then that means I'm going to be vulnerable, and I don't want to be vulnerable. Because if I'm vulnerable and if I let my walls down, then you will hurt me, and heaven forbid you should hurt me. I don't want to take the risks. He should take the risks. He was worse than I was. And I'll tell you, it's true. If you look at the alcoholic, put the alcoholic and put the family members, like, they look worse. I mean, we look pretty darn good. We're responsible. We're taking care of the kids. We got the job. We're paying the bills. You know, I mean, it looks pretty good. However, by the time I got to Al-Anon, I was not bathing. If I bathed twice a week, that was a lot. I was wearing hand-me-downs. But I'm buying clothes for him so that he looks good. Because if he looks good, then nobody's going to know how bad it is. Who's the crazy one? Who's the sick one? In the doctor's opinion of Alcoholics Anonymous, your book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says the alcoholic is in full flight from reality. Yeah, the alcoholic may be in full flight from reality, but guess who's chasing after him, man, trying to get ahead of him? What does that say about me? Yeah, what does that say about me? I was a mess, and I didn't know it. And because of these steps that led me to a spiritual awakening, where I got to the experience of a God who loves me more than anything, This God is amazing. Amazing. I never wanted anything to do with this God. Well, that's not true. When I was a little child of about 7 years old, up to the age of seven, I remember, because I went to Catholic girls' school, we'd have choir, and at choir we'd sing this song. It's my favorite song. And it was, God is love, love is God, and he who abides in love abides in God and God in him. I loved that. I was this little kid pouring my heart out in that song. I mean, I felt it. I felt it. But living with active alcoholism, horrible things happen. There's all sorts of abuse that happens. All sorts of abuse, neglect, terrible things. And when that happened to me as a child, I think that's when I cut off anything having to do with God. And I began to blame God for some abuse that I experienced at a hand of the relative, and I didn't even know it. I didn't even know it. And I get to you, and you guys are talking about God. You're talking about this power. You're talking about how God is love. And I'm thinking, I don't want nothing to do with this. Nothing. But you worked your way into my heart, and those steps worked their way into my soul, and my mind began to change, and my heart opened, and my spirit opened to the power, to the grace, to the blessing of God. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking, I invented God. You know what I mean? He's mine, man. All of you, you may have one, but yours is, you know, I don't think much of yours, but mine, he's rocking it, let me tell you. Well, we all know there's only one God. There's one God, and he loves us all. Loves us all. So before I came down here earlier to dinner, and I had time to really sit and pray and meditate, and I said, God, you know, is there anything that you need me to say to these people? And I wasn't getting anything, you know, and which kind of pissed me off, because God knows I really don't like that, you know. It's like, come on, dude, you got to give me something to work with here, you know. Come on, give me some illusion of power, you know what I'm saying? And I wasn't getting anything. But what came at the very end was, okay, I'm going to go back a little bit. Here's the deal. I'm sitting in permanent. This is true. True. I'm sitting, starting prayer and meditation. I'm going, I'm really nervous, God. I'm really kind of scared, because what if I suck? Okay, I haven't bombed yet, but there's always that first time. And what if tonight's the night that I just bomb and I totally suck? And what if I'm not enough? What if, like, I've been really fooling people to believe that I'm someone that I'm not, and I've been fooling myself to believe that I'm someone that I'm not, and it's all a lie. It's all a lie, and I'm a lie. And what came to me was, you're okay just the way you are. And you're not a lie. The disease wants to tell you that you're a lie. And the whole reason the disease wants to tell me that I'm a lie is that people, you people, all of us, we are messengers for God. And the disease doesn't want us getting close to the source. The disease doesn't want us getting close to the power. Because when we get close to the power, our light shines. And when our light shines, and when we begin to demonstrate the light and the power and the love of God, we pull people towards us and towards the power. The disease doesn't want to die. The disease wants to live. The disease of alcoholism is the disease that keeps on giving. It does not want to die. And God said, honey, you are enough, and I love you. And I think every one of us here is being called to be that light, to grow closer to the power that is our own power. Who is the God of each of our own understanding? What is that power? Get close to it. It's never let me down. When I've truly embraced it and opened myself up to the power, it has never let me down. And my job is not to hide my light, but to let it shine. And I am not the power, I am just the light. You are not the power, you are the light. And we are all lights for each other. And we are all here for each other. And we are all just doing our job of manifesting and sharing the experience of growing closer to the power that carries us all. And I'll tell you, it hasn't been easy. Tom and I celebrated 40 years a couple of weeks ago of marriage. It's a major miracle. We had 9 years of active alcoholism before either one of us came into our fellowship. And it has been a progress of incredible growth for both of us. Neither one of us, some days, I couldn't have imagined over 32 years ago that he would kneel down at the bedside with me before coming here tonight and ask God to open me up so that I might carry a message. First of all, I wouldn't have wanted it. Anything that he would have had to offer back then, it's like, I don't want it. You know, because that's who I was. And I love this man today. And because of the power, our relationship is not what it was when we came in. My relationship with my children is not what it was when we came in. And it's only because of these 12 steps that led me to an awakening, that led me to a God, that our grandchildren and our children are doing as well as they're doing. Because you know how kids are. Man, they grow up and they bring other people into your lives and they're called spouses, you know? And then they bring these other people into your lives and they're called grandchildren. And before you know it, your house has exploded, you know? And it's like, what I always thought was, oh, retirement age, and as I get older, life's going to get quiet. No, forget that. It gets busier and it gets more hectic. And you know what? It's filled with more joy and more happiness than I ever thought was possible. I got more by coming here to you than I ever dreamed I could ever have. It was everything I never thought I wanted. I didn't know I wanted the things that I have today. I didn't know I wanted a power greater than myself. But when I got to you, it was like this old Jessica Lange movie that she did about Patsy Cline. And in this car, she's sitting in the back seat, and she's just met her husband. He's not her husband yet. She just met him. But she's sitting in the back car with him, and she said, oh, my gosh, she's waking up in the morning. She says, my God, I was starving and I didn't even know it. And when I got to my first Al-Anon meeting, I was starving and I didn't even know it. And what I was starving for was the power that connected me with you, and the power that just rocks my world today, and the power that without, I couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine my life. Because this is a power, this is a God that I depend on the way I depend on air. And I have that. And I have you. And I have love in my heart to give. And I'm able to receive love simply because of this program. And if you had told me that that would have been one of the gifts I'd have gotten here, I would never have believed you. Because first of all, I didn't want an open heart, because an open heart can be broken. An open heart needs to be vulnerable. But you know what happens with an open heart? You have all of your incredible people that come into my life. Who knew? Who knew? And I have more blessings than I can imagine. I have more good things in my life that I didn't even know I wanted and desired. And my life is a dream, and I'm not saying it's perfect, but I have an incredible life today, and life still happens. still have some concerns about kids drinking and grandkids drinking and this happening and that happening, but you know what? It doesn't rule my world today, and there was a time when it was my absolute obsession. It's all I thought about, and it stopped me from living my life, and it does not stop me from living my life today. And I have you to thank for that. And I have Alcoholics Anonymous to thank for a sober husband. And I owe you all my world and my God, and I thank you. God bless.